Throughout the past year, we have become aware of things happening with Google. Some of us have heard about Gmail. Some of us have heard about something called Ajax and DHTML, which is going to figure prominently in the next presentation. And some of us have heard about other services that Google is offering, some of which appear not to be working quite as well for the blind as we wish they would. Take Gmail, for example. If you get a Gmail account, and if you wish not to use the web-based interface, but you prefer instead to use your own email client, you have to activate POP3 by going into your user settings and turning it on and then saving your configuration. None of those features are accessible today with your screen reader. So you have to get your fully plug-compatible biological interface to help you. All right. Now, Google is in the process of recruiting people with a programming experience to help in accessibility. Right now, I've seen the stuff on Google on 60 Minutes. I saw a little story on them, and there is a company that has fairly high recruiting standards. Now they're looking for people to help them in the programming for accessibility. If you're interested in applying, and again, I emphasize, I don't think I would qualify, so I'm not even going to try. But there might be some of you in this room who are, and if you are, I would encourage you to make an application. Now, Jim Barber there, he's is it Unix or Linux, Jim? Architect over there at
I'm
Google.
I'm a Linux architect. Responsible for yeah. John and the things.
Right, Jim, right. Yeah, no, I want to protect you. Hang on, listen. Jim Barber, him and I go way back a long time ago. He used to be on the board of this organization until I kicked him off. No, it's not true. Jim Barber is a Linux architect for Google, and he does nothing with accessibility, except he is a blind person, and he is working for Google, which means that he met their high recruiting standards. I don't know who he paid off, but he did. He managed to get in. And he is really not tasked with working on issues of accessibility, although he feels, because he's a good guy and a good member of the Federation, that he ought to at least become peripherally involved. So Jim has said to me, well, you know, Google's hiring. So if people want to work on accessibility and they have programming, go ahead and apply. So Jim, tell me, how would they do this? Or where do we go?
So, first of all, I am in room 595 of the hotel, and I'm sorry that they're in print, but I have print copies of the job descriptions if anybody wants them. I also have online copies and that I can mail to people. If you want to contact Google for a job, please call the following number, 650-253-4237. That's 650-253-4237. And again, I'm in room 595. I have that phone number. I can email people electronic copies of job descriptions, and I have print copies. Thank you, Curtis.
Thank you. All right, let me see if I can read my Braille notes. I have one hand to read with. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I think it's getting kind of cold in here. The next item on the program
is...
They all went to the... here's something. I did this to myself.
Plenty of room up here.
Lloyd, you're way back there. Well, early in the spring, Mike Barber from Iowa, some of you know him, and Jim Portillo from Washington came to me and said, we want to start a division for assistive technology trainers. And like a fool, I said, yeah, great. I think it's a wonderful idea. You trainers have to get together and make your own group. Well, they used to come to this meeting. They don't come to this one now. They're over there at another one talking about their organization. But the next item is called Firefox and Ajax. Yeah, that's what it's called, Firefox, stronger than dirt. IBM's effort around accessible open computing. And to present this item, we have Richard Schwarzbaker, who is a distinguished engineer and SWG accessibility. He's an architect, a strategist for IBM. And we have Becky Gibson, who is a web accessibility architect for the IBM Corporation. And in the interest of time, since I know they have a lot of stuff they want to tell you, I would like you folks to please give both these people, Rich and Becky, a very warm welcome and welcome to our meeting.
It's great to be back here. I don't think I've been here since 98 when we were doing job accessibility. What I want to talk to you about today, first of all, I want to talk to you about how Firefox became accessible. It's actually a very interesting story. How open source was used as a vehicle to advance the accessibility and usability of the web. We want to talk about how the accessibility features compare between Firefox and IE. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. We're going to talk about who's working on Firefox accessibility, what the accessibility projects are that are growing up around the Firefox accessibility ecosystem that's developed. And we're going to do a deep dive into dynamic web accessibility and AJAX. And we're going to finish up with some open source projects such as Dojo and the Linux accessibility work. Dojo. Okay, so how did Firefox become accessible? This is very interesting story. So back in 2003, IBM realized that the web was moving from document-centric to application-centric. And HTML didn't support your basic GUI constructs that you would find on a desktop. So what happened is web authors would go and simulate those in HTML using a combination of CSS and JavaScript to create these rich menus, tree views, editable spreadsheets on a web page, and they used JavaScript to do that. So JavaScript growth bloomed. It went over from almost nothing to over 50% of the websites. Now, the impression in the industry that JavaScript was inaccessible was actually incorrect. Okay, back in 99, that was the assumption from the W3C. The actual problem that we have is that HTML doesn't have what it takes to make those applications accessible by itself. And we found this out by going through a deep gap analysis of HTML. I mean, some of the fundamental things that you have today, how many people in the room are tired of tabbing on a web page? Wherever. Okay, so what if you could fix that and just tab to the important points and use your arrow keys for navigation? All right? You'd move around a lot faster. So also, would you like to know if things were a menu, if they were a spreadsheet, just fundamental things like that. So We felt that we had to fix the problem or we'd leave a lot of people with disabilities behind. But it wasn't something that we felt that IBM could do just by itself. We said, this can't be a proprietary solution. It has to be one that's open, free of intellectual property, available to the entire industry. So what we did is we started an effort in the W3C to fix the problem. And this effort, is, as Rob mentioned earlier, is called, well, we call it the Roadmap in the Web Accessibility Initiative. And what it does is it basically outlines the whole process, the technologies that are coming in to make this a success. Now, it's great that you have a specification, but you need something like a browser to make that happen. So we took a look at the industry back then, and we said, well, what's available to us? Well, we took a look at Firefox. This is pre-1.5, and interestingly enough, a lot of accessibility work had been done at Netscape, but it was never completed. The developer who had led a lot of the work was off working on other projects, and it didn't have assistive technology vendor support. Also, there wasn't a lot of focus back then by the Mozilla Foundation on accessibility. But we had to make the applications accessible, so what other options do we have? So we don't have control over other browsers. At the time, Microsoft wasn't focused on these types of applications, and they're getting involved with it now, which is I'm really excited about. So what were our options? Well, we took a look back at Firefox and Mozilla, and we said, you know, this thing runs on multiple operating systems, and it's open source. It means I can contribute to that effort, okay, and I can make it available for everyone. So that creates some unique opportunities because whatever work that we're doing in a W3C standard, we also want to be able to run on more than one operating system to make it real. So the other thing we needed to do is we said, you know, if we're going to do this, we have to do it on Windows first. I mean, you have over 90% of the desktops are running Windows. Let's be real. You got to do it there. And once we do it there, we can target other operating systems. So what do? So we went out and we hired Aaron Leventhal, who was the module owner, and brought him into IBM. And we started pulling IBM resources to get AT vendors to start supporting this. And something really exciting happened. Last year in October, we made an announcement that we've created another accessible browser that supported these rich Internet applications. And I would dare to say that is probably the largest accessibility announcement we've ever made at IBM. The excitement around this was global. And so what did it do? It showed that IBM was willing to contribute high-quality web access to all to use. It showed that these rich Internet applications could be accessible. The JavaScript wasn't this giant stumbling block that we had to deal with. It also showed something not just to the community, but IBM as well. It showed us that the open source development could be used as a vehicle to address one of industry's biggest accessibility problems. And so the other thing is the recognition for the effort placed Mozilla on a firm footing as a major accessibility supporter. I mean, it's unbelievable the transformation of the Mozilla Foundation. And the other thing it did is it established an accessibility ecosystem around an open source browser. I just can't tell you how exciting it was for the people involved with this project. So let's talk about really how open source is used to advance web accessibility and usability. So industry has little control over proprietary solutions. Yeah, we can participate, but the IP goes to that one product. We tend to be limited to their release cycles. Sometimes it's difficult to get accessibility issues addressed as much as the proprietary solution wants to support, and that includes IBM. So the results are often limited to that proprietary solution, but what if I want to take them somewhere else? So open means that you can innovate with less restrictions, and also we can create third-party extensions to the solution. Open means a broader range of people can participate in accessibility. I mean, we got a lot of smart people at IBM, but you know, there's a lot of smart people all over the place. Let's get them all involved with the effort. The other thing is open means survival of the fittest. The best solution wins. So if you go create an open source solution today, it better be good because somebody's right out there ready to knock on your door and create a better one. Or they may be willing to contribute to your own, which also is a good thing. So Firefox allowed us to support DHTML and AJAX early and advanced an open standard. So, you know, it's one thing to do the standard, but you also want to show people that it worked, and it's been transformational throughout the W3C. We talk about Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. It's been impacted by this work. All future HTML work is being influenced by it. Semantic Web is being influenced by it. It's amazing. So, and it's all because people are looking at accessibility today. Says, you know, I got those problems today too. I need to know information about the type of content so that I can adapt to devices and whatnot. So in some sense, we're all on the leading edge here. So I want to talk about Firefox has spawned a multi-platform accessibility ecosystem for new technology. So one of the things that has kicked off out of this is there's a new talking browser being developed at the University of Texas called Firefox. We have, so HPR is not the only one. So we have Linux platform accessibility support. We have enormous effort. There's a collaboration between IBM Sun and the Mozilla Foundation to make Firefox accessible on Linux. The University of Illinois is creating accessibility test tools for Firefox and accessibility extensions for it. Something really big that's come out of the Mozilla Foundation is an accessibility grants program to foster accessibility of innovation around their open source browser. So you can see a lot more contribution in this space. It's really heating up. So the other thing you might want to know is, well, what's the idea, what's the developer's impression of this? Well, you get somebody coming out of school, you get some really good engineers coming out of school, and you ask them, why do they want to work in the open source space? He says, well, you know, Rich, you know, if I leave IBM, I can continue working on my project when I go someplace else. That's great, you know. So the other thing is, you know, I can, if let's say Sun or somebody else were creating an open source project, I can contribute to that project without actually working at the company. So it's really exciting what's happening in the open source space. We're getting this huge ecosystem that's involving accessibility with the barriers being removed. The next thing, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I have an accessibility features comparison between Firefox and EE. The bottom line is both products have a lot of accessibility features in them. We have a digital HTML version of this. I'll let Curtis and myself distribute it. But I think the couple of points I wanted to point out about Firefox is the response for users that are testing this with screen readers is that the pages load faster. So for people who are screen reader users, that's what's exciting. I'm not sure if that's the accessibility implementation or what it is. It's just what they've been claiming to us. The other thing is the dynamic web accessibility support that's being built in. Not only is it providing access to Web 2.0 type applications, but the other thing is AT vendors, screen reader vendors, are redesigning their products using this technology to handle these types of rich Internet applications. Before, they basically treated web pages as static. And quite often you tend to lose information when you deal with it that way. Now it's becoming more dynamic like the graphical user interface, and they're being able to handle these issues. So, again, I won't go through the rest of the accessibility features. We'll pass those out electronically. So who is working on Firefox and accessibility? People will say, how many people are doing this? Well, if you exclude the side projects going on, like from the grants program, just the base enablement, we've got four people from IBM, and Aaron Leventhal is leading that effort. We've got three developers from for Sun on Linux, and these people are all over the globe. Some of them are in China, some of them are in Massachusetts. We also have two people from the Mozilla Foundation. That's just developers. We also have test teams across the globe working on this as well. So let's talk about what are the accessibility projects growing up around Firefox. So the University of Illinois, which has been big into accessibility, John Gunderson, who runs the group, was also the leader of the User Agent Accessibility Guidelines Working Group. They're creating test extensions to Firefox to be able to exercise dynamic web accessibility applications to make sure that they follow the specifications. One of the parts of dynamic web accessibility is each object on your page has semantics built behind it on the web. So you'd actually look at an object and say, all right, this guy created a custom object. Tell me about what properties it has. It's part of a taxonomy, so I'm not familiar with Rich's button. What is it? What else does it look like? Well, this is really a button guy. Yeah, it looks interesting, but it's Rich's button. So, and it acts like a button. So that's in there. The other thing is for things like user agent accessibility guidelines compliance, you need to have access to things like access keys. That's an extension to Firefox for those people that need those features, and it's all open source. And it's cross-platform. Charles Chen is working on Firefox, which is a talking web browser. He's written this all in JavaScript, and it drives a speech engine. It's really impressive. He's really done a phenomenal job here. Another open-source project that's starting up is called Accessibility Works, and we're working. One of the problems, I don't want to make this seem like it's easy, because whenever IBM needs to contribute, out of a proprietary company, need to contribute something to open source, it's like tooth extraction with the legal team. But we're in the process of doing this, and this is an application for seniors. It's an extension to Firefox that does page linearization, high contrast. It increases text, space between text, between lines, a lot of accessibility features like that for seniors. And it will run on Windows and Linux. The Mozilla Foundation Accessibility Grant Program projects is doing a number of things, like they're helping with Zoom text support. A new technology called X-Forms. This is a new forms model being introduced by the W3C. We're working to make that accessible. I think the important thing to say about X-Forms is it's largely today used in mobile devices. It's designed so that less enablement is done by the author because it's something we call declarative. It has a predefined data model, so when you say something is selected in your data model, that maps directly to the Accessibility API without any additional work. Mac enablement is also started out of the Mozilla Foundation. So we're going to look at Firefox being accessible on the Mac in the future. And there's a lot more to come. So how is open source a vehicle to advance the dynamic web accessibility standards? Well, in order for you to become a recommended standard by the W3C, you need two implementations. So Firefox is going to be one of those implementations. But, you know, being in the accessibility community, we have to answer to a higher authority. And that means we also have to make sure that it works with assistive technology, so the browser provides an integral role in that process. We also need to define new APIs in the future. Somebody mentioned, well, what about Ajax? Well, we need to do some API extensions to handle that. The knowledge of another object running, being important outside where you have focus, isn't completely addressed in all the APIs. So we're starting to address it in Linux, but what we're doing, if you look at end-to-end, what we put in the markup gets mapped directly to the API set we define. So we're all working as one with the AT vendors, the interoperability layer, and the markup. So, but I'm going to leave that for Becky. Becky's going to go into a deep dive on that. So it also helps us establish new use cases for dynamic web accessibility standards. So if we create to have this dynamic web page, I've got a bunch of accessible widgets on the page following the standard. Somebody creates a new use case like SAP, where they came up with a whole bunch of new use cases for us. And so they're working with us, and I feel like we're on a consulting engagement, but they're doing they're really doing a good job. SAP is very involved with this effort. And so we can define new role states and properties for that type of information. But more importantly, people talk about, well, it takes a while to get through the standards process. But what Firefox has allowed us to do is bootstrap the industry before the standards are out. So right now today, Yahoo's off making these DHTML accessible web pages today. And so is IBM and other companies. So, and lastly, I want to finish up before this leads into Becky. So why is the browser so critical to the dynamic web accessibility effort? The reason it is if you look at, this is rather technical, if you look at a web page, okay, each document element in your web page today, if you look at static HTML, its accessibility is completely dependent on the tag that you have in there. So what happens if you have a div? Anybody know what a div is? Okay. All right. But what does it mean? All right. It's a section, okay, in your page. But what happens with dynamic web accessibility and dynamic web applications is JavaScript gets introduced, and it becomes a new controller for that object. If you think of a model view controller architecture. And so what happens is it manipulates the data, it changes the style in response to events. And so that div all of a sudden can become a menu, all right, or it can become a spreadsheet, or something like that. So the browser, the important thing about the browser is the browser will take the data, because you want to separate content and presentation, and you want to map the data to the accessibility API. So what the dynamic web accessibility work does is it introduces things like what the role of the object is and the semantics behind it, and introduce the states and properties, what value you have, things like that, descriptions, and maps and allows you to map that directly to the accessibility API. And that was what was missing on the web. If you combine that with the fix for having to tab everywhere, which is, I mean, we're not going to put a menu on the page and make you tab through every element in your menu to get to the last one in the menu. That's not going to happen anymore. So that is actually being fixed, and it's actually that feature is working in both Internet Explorer and Firefox today. So with that, the last thing I want to point out is I do this once in the browser, and it runs on all the platforms. Okay, so as long as the browser can map that stuff to the API on the platform, we're good to go. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to turn it over to Becky Gibson, who's our web accessibility expert extraordinaire. And she's leading a lot of the DHTML implementations in IBM. She's the guru here. And I'd like to welcome Becky Gibson.
Thanks, Rich. So I'm going to take us into a little bit deeper dive into the dynamic web content accessibility and Ajax. And so, who knows what Ajax is?
Asynchronous.
Okay.
something.
Okay, asynchronous JavaScript and XML. Now, and if you're fairly new to the web, you probably think it was something Google invented just recently. And it wasn't. No, HTTP, XML over HTTP has been around for a while, and we can actually thank Microsoft for that. And it has actually been used. Microsoft used it. My background is from Lotus, and they actually used it in some of our products. But it didn't get really exciting until Google used it, and it started becoming this great technology, and it got a name, and that really has helped make it much more popular. And so now everybody's like, I got to have AJAX. So what does it do for you? And what it does is it allows an incremental update of your web page. So we're all familiar with the regular web paradigm, where you execute, you know, you access a link, you press enter, and you wait, and your whole page gets updated. Well, now with the introduction of AJAX, we're able to now just increment a piece of that page. So you don't have to wait for the full upload of the page. If you just want a specific piece of data, the programmer can put that in, and that can be updated. And it can be updated without you asking for it, which can prevent a few problems. It is, however, one of the good things about AJAX is it's built using standard web technologies. So it uses the alphabet soup that you, if you're familiar with the web, HTTP, HTML, XHTML, cascading style sheets, JavaScript, the document object model, or DOM, and XML. So it's a standard, it's very standards compliant, which is good because that allows it to be cross-platform. And again, it's used by many popular internet companies, Google being one, Yahoo, Google Maps, Google Suggest, Yahoo has a Suggest, Yahoo has Maps, Flickr, the photo sharing site, Basecamp is another one, Kayak, which is an online travel. And I think I got them all. And Yahoo is actually releasing an AJAX library, a downloadable SDK. So I probably don't have to tell you folks there are accessibility issues with AJAX, right? First off, you may not, as an assistive technology users, are not necessarily aware of an update. So I'm merely listening to a part of the page, and I've, you know, gone through the top half of the page, or I'm down near the bottom, and some major, you know, magic AJAX occurs, and somebody updates near the top of the page. Well, I have no idea that that happened. Again, the updates occur on a different section of the page than you're currently interacting with. Maybe because you're a screen reader user, could be because you're a screen magnifier user, large font, so it's scrolled off the page. A lot of different for reasons. Again, clicking a link, the old paradigm says, I click a link, a whole new page gets updated. Well, that's not necessarily the case anymore. Clicking a link may just update one section of your page, and you may not know what section that is. Autocomplete fields or generate options are not always available. Google Suggest actually works fairly well with a screen reader. It could be better if you are more aware that as you're typing in letters, you're getting suggestions offered to you. You might, even if you know, okay, I come into the page and they do a good job. They give me explanation. They say, oh yeah, we're going to use this new technology. We're going to update pieces of your page. But you don't have any idea where that's occurring or how to find that new or updated content. Changes in focus can prevent a complete review of the page. So that's especially, can be, you know, it's easy to explain as far as screen reading goes. You're reading a part of the page, suddenly an update occurs and it changes focus, takes you somewhere else on the page. The screen reader says, oh, we're going over here now, and it starts reading. So it's a very obvious issue with a screen reader, but think also somebody that has any kind of cognitive issues. Maybe they're a slow reader, and we're just getting through the first paragraph of the page, and suddenly focus shifts, and my page gets taken, I get taken to another area of the page. Now I have to go navigate back to where I was, start reading again, and boom, focus shifts again. So certainly different issues, and that change in focus, you know, adds to the navigation, and it can be very disorienting. It makes it almost impossible to interact with that page. And it is. This whole Web 2.0 AJAX, use of AJAX, is a big paradigm shift for all users. Like I said, the model has been, I click on a link, I wait, a whole page gets updated, I start at the top again, and I read down. Now, there's pieces being updated on different pieces, parts of the page. So what can we do? So there's solutions, and a lot of times I've given this, I'm trying to approach a lot of web developers. What can we do now, today, to inform users about AJAX? and the use of Ajax. So there's things you can do with basic HTML, and that we need to start reminding developers about and to follow these guidelines. So one of the things is just tell people that you're updating the page. Make them aware. Before you're accessing that Ajax-enabled page, try to give users an overview. Here's what's happening. I'm updating this section of the page. Or, you know, you can manually, I'm skipping ahead, but you can do that before you access the page or even within the page. So just brief introductions to say what's going on. Wherever possible, there are some applications which want to automatically update the page for you. They think they're giving you a great service. It's like, every 10 seconds, I'm going to update the page for you. Isn't this great? I'm going to fix this little section. So wherever possible, we encourage the web developers, provide an update, a manual update option. And in fact, I'm also a member of an IBM representative on the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines Working Group, WCAG. So I throw in a few of the guidelines. That's important if you're going to meet the guideline 2.2 about interruptions and making sure that they can be turned off, except unless it's an emergency. If you've asked the user if they want to update manually, we'll save that. If you're doing some kind of a authentication, you certainly know a little bit about the user, and if they have made a preference to say, I don't want automatic updates, save that somewhere, either as a cookie, if that's available, or again, if you're using server authorization, you can store that information for the user. For make updates noticeable. So, okay, for visual users, not everyone is going to notice that. So change the background color of an updated area. We can use scripting, and we can do that, and we can change it for a few seconds. And that will highlight it for people that may have attention issues. It can focus attention there without actually setting focus to the new area. Or we can potentially briefly blink the data. Again, blinking is one of those sort of a little bit controversial things. But again, WCAG has guidelines about making sure that you don't blink anything for more than 3 seconds. And being aware of flash thresholds. Now, there's other ways to help users locate updated information, and some of these can be a little bit controversial, and they really depend on the application. So one of the things is you can provide an option to show the updates via an alert. Now, some of you, I'm sure, would cringe at that. This is a JavaScript alert that grabs your attention and gets spoken immediately. That may not be appropriate for all applications, but it's something to be aware of. If it's an important piece of information, you've told the user it's going to happen, you've given them an option to say don't do it manually or not, you can use an alert. You can also set focus. Again, a minute ago I told you focus can be bad. It can change your attention. It can throw the user off. But again, there's so many things people can do with Ajax, so many different types of applications, that sometimes setting focus to the new data may be an appropriate technique to use. And again, one of the other things that the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines stresses is to use structured HTML. So if you put things under headers and use actual H tags to mark those as headers, assistive technology users can find those. Now, one of the things I wish some of the browsers would catch on with is allowing people to visually navigate by headers using the keyboard. Opera has done that. There are plugins for both Firefox and IE to do that. But all of the screen readers allow you to navigate by headings. So if you use the proper structural elements to lay out your page and you tell people, hey, you're going to do a search. I'm going to use this Ajax. I'm going to update the results. And I'm going to find a search for you. I'm going to put the results under a header that says search results. So now somebody hits the go button to do a search. Great, now I know. I might not hear that came back, but I can go use my header navigation, find that heading that says search results, and find the information that you've told me as the developer that is there. So now those are the things you can do today without our dynamic web content accessibility. But what can we do further than that? And Rich talked on this. And I sort of skip it. The full phrase is dynamic web content accessibility. I tend to say DHTML accessibility because it's less of a tongue tie for me. So what we're doing is we're creating widgets on the web page. People do that today. You know, if you hit a tree control today on the web, you have to tab by that expand contract, and you have to tab next to the file folder. Then you tab, and you finally get to the tree item name, and you can press enter, perhaps to open or close it. But we're creating those today, but they're not necessarily usable. We get around using the tab key, and we have to tab many, many times. And people are creating trees. That's very common on the web. Tab panels, menus. We can create editable data grids. So we can create these fully accessible widgets that mimic desktop application interactions. Same kind of controls you use on the desktop, we're allowing you to use on the web today. But the big thing is we're allowing you to use them like you would on the desktop. So we've added this role and state information. So we're adding semantic metadata into the HTML. So when I use a div to create a tree control, I can mark that div and say this div is a tree. And then all of the items within the tree, I can mark and say, okay, now I've made another little div, and that's a tree item. And that tree item has a state. It's either expanded or collapsed. So now I know if it has a state of expanded, if it has either state, expanded or collapsed, I know it has more items, and I know what state, if they're expanded or collapsed. Given that information now, the screen reader can take that and they can extract that goes into the document object model. They can extract that, and what Firefox is doing is converting it to MSAA, which the screen reader, in this case WindowEyes, which I'll demo with, is picking up and speaking to you. So now, by creating this HTML widget and adding just a little bit more information and adding keyboard support, I'm allowing you to navigate that tree control just like you would if you entered a tree control in Windows. And I was actually happy to hear in Rob's demo, he did hit on a tree control, and it told you that, you know, there was a tree and with how many items and how many levels. And we can actually hear that now on a web page as well. We can, there's a lot of different roles that there are. One of the additional ones that's useful, especially for Ajax, is the alert role. So there is an alert that will allow you to create an unobtrusive notification. So it'll come up, and I can create, say, a floating div, give it a role of alert, and as it comes up, it will tell you alert and speak it to you, but it won't remove the focus from on the page where you were. There's also one of the things that's coming is being further worked out in the protocols and formats group is what's called a live region, and that's specifically to address Ajax. So you can mark a region on your page and say this is a live region. And this region has different parameters for what the frequency of updates are, how important those updates are. And they've also added a whole concept of politeness to indicate whether you should be interrupted or when or not. So it may be a polite message. It may be an alert message. It may even be a rude message, which says, come in, take over our focus, and make this important. And maybe we need to even think about, you know, maybe that could be an emergency level type message. But this is key because it allows a developer to say, okay, here's this region. I know I'm going to update it, and here's how often I would like to update it. And then if the screen readers want to take that information and present it to the user, there's certainly a lot of possibilities about how we could use that to make the interaction easier, either have a way for the user to find those regions or to interact with the screen reader and say, okay, this is just a polite message. They want to tell me something every 30 seconds. I only want to know every minute or every 2 minutes or something like that. So there's certainly things that the protocols and formats group is very aware of Ajax and working to make that better. And then in addition to, we also have content landmarks. So now we can mark things and say, this is main content. This is navigation. Here's secondary content. So instead of the user necessarily have to programming a skip link in to different places, you can actually find that out because you've marked those areas when you developed it, and the browser can tell you without you having to have the skip link. I think we finally got to the demo, so I'll...
It's just that easy.
Let me start. So I'm using Firefox 1.5. And I am using WindowEyes 5.5.
WindowEyes 5.5.
Volume okay there?
Yep.
Sorry, I didn't have Firefox running.
It's loading.
Firefox is.
WindowEyes. Mozilla Firefox.
Book 'em, Dano.
I like Okay. The floating page. Load up to unreleased new heading simple Ajax application. This is a simple demonstration of how Ajax can use the updated contents on the page. Ajax can pair licensing with HTML accessibility technologies to allow easy navigation to updated content without losing the position of other components.
Okay, so what I have here, and it's a very simple application. I'm a developer. I'm not a UI designer. So you get the application, basic application. So what I've done here is think about a help application that you might have used. We on the left hand pane, we have two panes on the page. I have a little intro. We have two panes on the page. On the left hand page is your tree control that you're going to go through, and you're going to look for your help items. You're going to find out what you want. On the right hand pane is where the content will be updated. Perfect Ajax application. Because now, instead of me finding that item that I want, pressing enter, having the whole page reload, having to tab through and find that content area, now I can use Ajax to update that content area very quickly without having to re-navigate through my tree control.
Browse off.
So I go into browse off mode and I tab.
Antarctic. Close one of two depth one tree view.
Okay, so you just heard we're closed one of one depth one tree view. We're in a web page. This was a tree. You were told immediately this was a tree. I marked it up with DHTML accessibility. It's now a tree. Now instead of me tabbing and being told to expand or collapse or it was open or closed, I finally found that. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to hit the right arrow key.
Antarctic. Expanded three items, one of two.
So again, I'm arrowing now. Same keys that I would use as if I was interacting with a tree control in the Windows operating system. I'm going to down arrow.
Penguins. Close one of three, have two.
Right arrow.
Expanded five items, one of three.
So I'm just using right arrow to expand, left arrow to contract, up and down arrows to go through the items. You're hearing where we are. We're in a tree, what depth we are, how many items there are, whether it's open or closed. So now I can arrow down.
Abby, one of five, depth three.
Okay. I should give you a little background. I'm also a photographer it's one of my serious hobbies, and I tend to be interested in cold weather for some reason, and I've been to Antarctica, and I also went up and saw the polar bears, hence my little demo that goes through penguins. So I want to find out more about penguins, so I was on Adelie, and I pressed enter. Okay, those that could see the screen would see that the right-hand content updated to tell me about Adelie penguins. And this is where that live region will come in, because in that case, we could tell you that an area of the page had been updated. Well, that's coming. But I can now, I'm just going to hit the tab key, because I know that this is how this is laid out, and I tab.
Adelie penguin, tab text.
It takes me over to that updated content of the page, and I made it a tab stop, that heading, so that I could have it and give it a transcription so it could be read to me. And I said, you know what? Adelie penguins isn't what I want. I remember now. So if this had been a typical application, what I would have done when I hit Adelie is it would have reloaded the whole page, your focus would have gone back to the top, and then in order to get to that penguins again, we probably would have had to tab about 20 times to get back into that tree control, tab, 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 tab. Now, because we used Ajax and this tree control, I'm going to shift tab.
Adelie, one of five, three, two.
So now, there I am, back in the tree component. I don't have to go re-navigate, and I can now just start where I left off and go down.
Gen 2 of 5. Emperor, 3 of 5. Gen 2, 4 of 5.
Okay, Gen 2, I kind of like those penguins. I'm going to press enter again. Again, in the future, we'll be notified that something that the screen updated. But I can go check. I can just tab over to that content area.
Gen 2 penguin, static text.
Yep, that's where I want to be. I'll leave my browse mode. Go back to browse on. So I can use my heading navigation to get to that heading again, and then I can start browsing. And I can start getting to that information. If I want to get back to my tree control,
browse off.
Shift tab. And I should.
Browse off. What was that?
Oh, I want browse.
Browse off.
Well, my browser.
Browse off. Search Google. Edfox.
Oops.
Gen 2, 4 or 5.
There we go. So I'm back in the tree view with two tabs. Okay. Fine.
Right. 5 or 5.
And I'm back into the tree view. I can left arrow.
Penguins. Expanded 5 items, 1 of 3, have 2.
Again, and I know where I am. I can left arrow.
Penguins. Close 1 of 3. Antarctic. Expanded 3 items, 1 of 2, have 1. Antarctic. Close 1 of 2. Arctic. Close 2
so
of 2.
So I can navigate through that tree item. So this is just a tree item. Think of what we can do with menus, Think of what we can do with tab panels. Now you know that you're in a tab panel. You know how many tabs there are. When you get there, you can use the arrow keys to go from tab to tab. We're having a little bit of a debate to figure out what's the best mechanism for updating that tab. Because the current model is when you arrow to another tab, it immediately loads. And maybe if that's coming from a web page, we don't want to wait for that load. We want to have that extra enter key. Or do we want it work exactly like it does in Windows? But anyway, that's the overview. We'll just stick with that one.
That's fine. You go to talk to
them. No.
You talk about the associations, where you just don't have to tell you anymore. Know that it controls it.
So that, I mean, I can show you some of the other problems. I don't think I need to show this audience the problems with alerts and what alerts can do. Or how to use headings more effectively. I mean, again, that showed you how to use the heading. One of the other things I can show you, I'm getting on.
Loading page. Load on one heading. Stock research and company. By entering the stock symbol code, get information about the company and the yearly price history. Enter symbol LFCY and box. Enter symbol. The resulting page will incrementally update the current price of the stock you are doing. Please select an update method.
Okay, so this is an entry into what might be a stock research application. You come in, you enter your symbol. It's going to take you further into a page to show you more about that particular stock. And I use this to say, okay, there's different update methods. Right now, I have 5 update methods available for this particular page because I was trying to prove a point. There's one that says, you know, display updated information without any notification, use an alert box, set focus, or show updated information manually. I'm going to go ahead to...
Enter symbol. Display updated information. Display updated information via non-intrusive notification.
So this is
radio button checked.
So this is using display the updated information via non-intrusive notification. So that when I pick this, I'm going to load a new page. It's going to be like a stock research page. I'll let it go talking for a little bit because it has an automatic update to show you how the stock price might be changing automatically.
Submit. Loading page. Load. Browse off.
Oh, see, I blew it. I turned off browse off. So if I wait and we wait here for...
current price of LFCY is $27.58. Read-only edit box.
So what that was is that was a read-only edit box using that...
current price, 27.58 read-only edit box. Current price of LFCY, $31.48. Read-only edit box.
So what I'm doing here is I've actually created a pop-up alert. So visually on the screen, there is a pop-up div in a different color showing up to show me that the price has changed. And then I'm using this particular alert in the DHTML accessibility to not change the focus on the screen, but to speak that particular alert box every time it's displayed. So that you might not agree that it's unobtrusive, but it's much less unobtrusive than a traditional alert box, which will take your focus away and require you to press enter. So that was the other option of that. So I'm going to turn off window eyes. And go back to. Oops, sorry about that.
So come
on. That's right. Hey, you didn't know we were at snacks, did you? So one of the other things that we're looking at, have any of you heard of Dojo as a development tool, not as your karate? Dojo is an open source JavaScript toolkit for developing. Ajax applications, and so it's open source. There's a lot of different communities that are involved. IBM, that's why we're here talking about it. AOL, JotSpot, Open Laszlo, Sun, a lot of groups involved. And basically, what it is, and it's this great, you know, UI flashy toolkit. And we're like, okay. But if you're going to get companies that are going to want to use this toolkit and you want to make a basic toolkit, it needs to be accessible. So one of the things that we're doing, and specifically what I'm working on, is taking these dynamic web accessibility technologies that I showed you here, and we're working and putting them into that open source toolkit. So then when people build using this toolkit, they can pull out these widgets, and when they put a tree control on their page, it will be accessible and have the background for it to be accessible, or for a menu, or a tab control, or if they want to make a flashy checkbox, it still will operate and tell you that it's a checkbox and not just an image that has no information behind it. So with that, I think I'm in the wrong mode. Sorry, I switched modes. I got caught. You know I'm reading off my slides here. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to Rich, and he's going to finish up, and then I think we've left enough time to take a few questions.
Yeah, really quick, we talk about open source projects. I don't know how many people know about the work that IBM's doing on Linux today. Okay, so one of the things we're doing now is we have a lot of work going on in Linux. One of the things we're doing is we're working with Sun and other people in the industry to finish up the accessibility infrastructure on Linux. And most of that work should be wrapped up by the end of the year. A lot of things that we need for, like, dynamic web accessibility, we've actually extended the API set on Linux to be able to handle that. So that's in process. The other thing we're doing is we're working on two separate full-screen magnification projects. One is called Metacity, which is the Metacity window manager. We're adding a full-screen magnification in that. And we're also working on a separate one called the MCM, Magnification Composite Manager Full Screen Magnifier, and that's also open source. And we've got actually contributions from Ubuntu, and also IBM's AIX team is actually contributing to the magnification work there. So what you're starting to see is through open source, we're getting contributions from the industry. And one of the best ones that I see is this. We also are building a screen reader for Linux. It's all written in Python. It's scriptable. It's all open source. And we're getting contributions. So one of the things we always have to do, I'm sure Rob will tell you this, we have to translate everything. And it's always a big piece of work at a company. Well, for this, we go out and we create the screen reader, and also the Linux community says, oh, we'll do the translation for you. Great. Go ahead. Go do it. Google, TV Raman from Google, is actually contributing to enhance the performance on our speech engine. So he's working with us. So to give you an idea, Ubuntu's doing packaging for us for their release of Linux. And we're starting to get this ecosystem where we're leading it, but we're not the only ones involved with it. We're getting contributions from the industry. And I think, finally, I talked about Firefox. So, give you an example of what's happening now. We got about another month and a half, 2 months left, and basically most of the enablement will be in Firefox. And then we'll start coming in with the Linux screen reader from IBM, the Orca screen reader from Sun, and we'll start making it work and testing it. So it's all going at the same time. So we're changing the screen reader, submitting bugs against the Firefox browser, and it's all happening at lightning speed. So what you're going to see is in Firefox 3, you should have full accessibility support for just general static web applications as well as dynamic web applications, which is next year. I hope everybody enjoyed the presentations. It was a great presentation, Becky, on DHTML, and I hope that you learned a lot from the work that we've been done in the open source community. Thank you.
All right. Well, now I'll take some questions. We actually are ahead of time. Whoa! I got Lewis. Who else? Brad Hodges. What? Yeah. Okay. So I got three of you. Lewis.
Okay. How does that relate to the Copernicus system? And if you use the KDE desktop, does anything that relate to that?
Okay. So first of all, Copernicus work has basically come to a halt, and the only two screeners that work now are both Orca and LSR. Both the KDE desktop and GNOME use the same accessibility infrastructure. So they're going to work. Okay, so they'll be able to work on both platforms. And we're actually working with the KDE community on the standards and the APIs and whatnot. So those will be your screeners for that platform.
So I'm comfortable with nothing.
I think that the industry is basically we're going to be moving away from Copernicus. You can use Copernicus for now, but within a few months, that's not going to be the case.
Richard Figger said it. No practice is history.
Yeah.
Okay, Brad.
Next question.
Yeah, I just want to say that from my perspective, I've heard over the years many a web hijack through cutting edge web discussion rarely, if ever, have I heard a presentation as coherent and, frankly, making me more optimism than Rebecca. And I want to say thank you. And I take encouragement from that. I don't know about others in this room, but I believe that that stuff is in quite good hands with you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Well, that's nice.
I would have said it if I thought about it, but Brad got there. Okay, in it, Cal.
Just a curious question about Ajax. Is it similar to XML?
It is XML.
Well, let me answer. Do you want me to answer or do you want to answer?
Well, it doesn't have to be XML. XML is one way you can use the data. I mean, that's where it gets its name from. You don't have to. I mean, it basically is asynchronous JavaScript and XML, the thought being that your data is coming in via XML and getting parsed and putting on the web page. It doesn't have. You don't have to use XML as your data protocol.
All right.
In fact, my demo, I wasn't. But.
So let me see if I can ask my question now. It's a simple one.
Those are the toughest.
Yeah, well, the Firefox browser, which is now out and available, what is it, 1.7? So you showed it today with Windows. Is it working with the other screen reader?
Yes.
You don't have to. I mean, is it working with JAWS? There's a lot of people in this room are JAWS users, right?
I do know that JAWS is working on it, but for me to say something about their release schedule is not
appropriate. No, forget the release schedule. I'm talking about 7.1 is out right now.
Yeah.
If I download Firefox, I install it and use it today with JAWS, because I'm not a Windows user. I know that some people are. Am I going to get some function, no function, less function?
Well, you're going to get more function than you've had before with JAWS.
More than I've had before with JAWS,
right.
It says. Okay, that's really all right. I was after. In other words, I don't have. It's a thing I don't have to worry about.
Right, they're working on it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
Now, this is
rather easy. You ought to think about it.
Magic is the same way. Magic 10 actually has a lot more support in Firefox now than it did in its previous version.
Firefox and JAWS. That's usable as IE with it this way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Okay, good.
Well, we haven't talked about IE7, so.
No, IE6, sorry. I don't talk about things that are not out.
IE7 is not out yet.
It's a beta.
All right, now, any questions? Don't say questions. Tell me who you are.
Mike Sayoun.
Mike Sayoun, go.
You mentioned a dev tool. You mentioned some screen readers on Linux. What about, in terms of dev tools, what about Eclipse?
Yeah, well, there's development tool. Well, we actually have an internal. You mean for Ajax, the HTML?
I was talking about
Ajax. Okay, the Eclipse work that we're doing actually around Ajax is actually being done internally in a project called Raven inside of IBM, and so that's an interesting discussion. So what you're starting to see with DHTML and Ajax is you're starting to see the lines blur between what is a GUI application and what is a web page. All right. So what's exciting about that is now you can start using the same tooling. Okay. So what we're doing on Raven, we have this project in IBM. It's actually being done in research right now, and it's and what it is it's a tool that basically uses either MSAA or, in the case of Java, it'll talk to Java or it'll talk to the Eclipse API, accessibility API, and it'll actually drill down and talk to the application through its native accessibility interfaces. And so that's actually in process right now, and it's also going to be targeted for Linux. I can't give you time frames on that, but that's in process. Now, the other side of the development tool is people that pick up Dojo, in their most of those applications are model-based authoring tools. And so you're basically, it's kind of like Legos. I want to pull this accessible object and I'm going to drop it on my page. I'm going to pull that accessible object and I might have to change a couple of properties. Like if there's some special image, I add the alt text. But the heavy lifting has been done. That's one of the things about these types of apps. The accessibility is actually probably the least difficult part. Writing those apps is not a trivial thing. So it's better just have these libraries of open source reusable widgets that you can assemble.
Can you fit Dojo inside of this?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there's the whole Open Ajax Foundation that IBM is part of. And there is actually a group within Emerging Technologies that has made a plugin to Eclipse that's currently available on IBM's AlphaWorks. It's in progress. It's not ready for prime time, but they're actually worked with Rico, Dojo, and Zimbra toolkits to allow you to do the easier development of the applications using. And they've made, you know, they've integrated the debugger into Eclipse and some of the DOM inspector, so it's right there in your Eclipse workspace. That's what I actually use. It, all that stuff doesn't work perfectly yet, but it's there, and it's a sort of an open source type available project.
But there's a roadmap with an eventual end.
No road has an end.
Well, I don't know about this. This is a, you know, sort of a, you know, the Emerging Technology Group proves that things can be done, and we try to convince other people to take them over.
The superhighway keeps getting wider.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Who's that?
Tracy Sprecher.
Tracy?
I have two questions. One, you mentioned Dojo accessible objects. Does that mean the developer, which generally they're not competent enough to know this, has to pick specific objects that are accessible, or out of the box, all of the objects, or most of the objects, are come out accessible?
The goal is that most of the, or all of the objects will come out accessible. I mean, I'm just starting right now, and I sort of have to do that, prove that it can be done, show people how to do it, document it, and do the first pass through the existing widget sets, and then make up the rules. As you create a new widget, if you create one, here's what you need to do to make sure it's accessible. So, you know, today, if you go and pick up Dojo, you're not going to get an accessible widget. You'll get a tab panel that's in progress, but the goal that, you know, we're starting, I just started this back in June.
Okay. Second question. Java Faces. My agency that I run technology projects for is trying to decide should we go there or not. What are your impressions?
Go where?
To Java. Oh, I mean, okay.
Java Faces as our standard for development.
Calls for speculation on the part of.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say without knowing. I mean, we have done some Java Faces like widget sets as well. I mean, you can use these technologies with JSF as well. But I can't say go one way, go another.
Oh, okay. I believe there's that. Is that the one that's going on in Apache, right? There's an Apache project that IBM, I think, is involved with to take JWL over there for open source as well.
Yeah, but that's not. He's just asking generally about Java JSF, Java Server Faces. I mean, some of our product groups have used it for widget sets. I personally haven't, so I can't really say use one or the other. You don't have to, but this technology will work with that as well.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Yes, BFAM.
B?
BFAM.
Go ahead, BFAM. Go ahead, you're on. Orca.
I would send an email to Peter Korn at Sun. It's peter.korn.
K-O-R-N.
At sun.com.
I think it has a blog also, though, a developer's blog.
They do. Willie Walker's running that, and I don't have the location for that.
What's the IBM screen reader?
It's called LSR. It's the Linux screen reader, and if you look at the handout, the HTML version, it has a link to it.
Which we're going to get, and we will distribute. So this is why we wanted to get your email address, right? Because if you want any of these handouts, if I don't have your email address, you won't get them. V, yes.
When you're talking about Java and Eclipse, I wonder if there are certain ways that you can standardize them. Are there any
you guys want to tackle that or leave that for somebody else? You're not obligated to answer that question. I know.
I don't believe that there are, but maybe Guido.
Mr. Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
I believe that people can go on the Bookshare site and download several variety books.
Yes.
Eclipse. That's right.
Which, by the way, I'm not even restricted to the U.S., so they could be downloaded from whichever country around the world, including our Antarctica penguins.
I think they have fiber optics to Antarctica now, don't they? Yeah. Susie?
I don't remember who the person was, but I remember there was a person
tried to write a tutorial, and I think I can probably find out after the convention.
Thank you.
All right. Anybody else with a question?
James? I have a quick
James?
Okay.
You wait. I got you.
Also, one is, I guess it's about sort of Ajax and how it works. I guess that it doesn't, well, the point of Ajax is that it doesn't really matter what kind of code the person is using to simulate a preview or something, since I know that one of the problems with, like, the DOM, or one of the ones in the past anyway, has been that, like, comparing, like, Internet Explorer and Netscape with Firefox, they usually used to have, or still have, different ways of doing things, like Internet Explorer would do it through the style. So I guess like controls would work in one or not with the other, or are they trying to make the DOM more like cross-cutting?
Well, I mean, that's where some of the toolkits come in. I'm more familiar with Dojo. I mean, they're trying to, and most people that do write for different browsers end up having a compatibility layer. So you have a JavaScript object, and you make a call, and it does the work of saying, oh, is this IE or Netscape? And that's what some of the toolkits do as well. Because actually Ajax is implemented a little differently on the two browsers. So you do have need sort of that compatibility layer, and that's what some of the toolkits will provide.
Okay. And also, I noticed that when you put it on the item attribute, this is more of a sort of, using it, not like when you clicked on the Gentoo Penguin, you had to turn the forms mode off, browsing on, whatever. And then you had to find it. So how would it always be hitting level 2? Like, is there a standard way to find it on the page? I was thinking that when you'd have to, a static text, you'd be able to navigate it, and it's content, and it's content alone, like the arrow. Like a normal static text, but it sounds like you have to turn the forms mode on, so you can go back to the static page. And find it there, and I didn't know how exactly you would know how to find it.
Okay, so this is Rich. What we're introducing in dynamic web accessibility is something new. It's called relationships. It's one of the core things that you would find in any semantic web technology. But basically, the object that you're using as your controller, like your tree item, will have a reference to the object that's changing. So the AT just goes zoom right there and goes. You're done. So you don't have to tab if you don't want to. It'll have that association, which is really nice. So I think that answers one of your issues. So you combine that with the other things that Becky was talking about, the frequency of update, whether something is rude, you have an update that's interrupting you on the page. You or the AT can make an intelligent decision as to whether you want to process that or not. It's up to you. But now you'll be informed about that, so you know what objects you're controlling on your page and whether you want to actually process that information.
But I don't mean, generally write to the object that's updated. I mean, it doesn't do that in Windows anyway. It's like help or something like that. I mean, when she actually had to static text to the text, and it said it was a static text, but it sounded like in order to read it, she had to switch back to a different view of the whole page.
Yes. I mean, I was able to tab to it and have it read me the heading because I added a description. So that's one of the roles I could add. And I added a description to the heading, and I made it a tabbable item. So when I left the tree control, I tabbed to the heading. And because I had a description, it immediately spoke it to me. But you're right. In order for me to then go and read and interact with the other static text on the page, the rest of the information, I did have to go back to browse on mode or out of forms mode, if your JAWS user, to actually have it read me line by line. So in order to do the interaction and the navigation, I need to be in forms mode or browse off mode.
Where you're moving the independent cursor supplied by this AT. Yeah, okay. All right, somebody in the front, my left, had a question? No? Okay. Any other questions? Okay, well, let's give a big hand for these two.